world? Does it point to God that determines right and wrong? Can we live a moral life without the existence of God, as many atheists claim? So difficult, relevant, I think, fundamental questions that we all face that we hope we can discuss. But just rule of thumb that I don't want this to be a lecture. I would like this to be a discussion. That's why I don't want to sit on a chair and a podium or anything like that. I want to roam around and basically have more of a discussion, as long as it's constructive. I would encourage that. So raise your hand, interrupt, or raise your hand first, and then I'd like to hear from you. And at the end as well, we can have Q&A. If you don't want to speak out loud, you can write your question on a piece of paper, and I'll be more than happy to share the answer with you all. Sounds good? Okay. So I wanted to, tonight we want to talk about the existence of God from the question of origin. Where did it all come from? Tomorrow we will tackle the existence of God as well from a different perspective. Who determines right and wrong? Morality and ethics. A little bit of philosophy as well. Tomorrow night we will discuss the question of destiny. Is there life beyond the grave? Where are we going when we die? We will also discuss the tenets of atheism, what they believe in, and what we as believers, not Christians, just mere believers in God, how can we defend our position? And then ultimately on Sunday, I would like to end with the case for Christianity. Now we've talked about the existence of God. He does exist, okay, great. Now we made that argument. Now which God? Is it the God of Buddhism, the God of Islam, the God of Christianity? What is so special about Jesus Christ? Again, all of these lectures are going to be void of reference. I maybe have one or two slides, reference of the scriptures, and that's by design. I would love to, of course, pepper these lectures with several scriptural references, but the reason why I intentionally did not want to use the scriptures, so that we can, as we talk to atheists or non-believers, so that we can have what? Common ground on which, common platform on which we can entertain our arguments. What is that common ground that we have with atheists? Not the scriptures, because they don't believe in the Bible. Reason, exactly. Logic, intellect, and reason. How can I sit with my roommate who's an atheist or my colleague who's an atheist and reason with him and her? And that is primarily the objective that I would like to leave with you. Does that sound good? Okay. Are we all good with English, or do you want me to say a few words in Arabic here and there? So, what do you think of that? Okay. Arabic, شوية كده كده. I think you want to بيهزر. Okay, ماشي. All right. So, is there a God? I call this is life's ultimate question. Is there a God? Ravi Zacharias, one of my favorite authors and teacher myself. He said, your morality, your language, the way you treat others, your private values, how you handle money, how you handle sexuality, all of this are the entailments of whether you believe God exists or not. It is the most fundamental question that we, as Christians, and I'm making an assumption here that we're all Christians, okay? We as believers must be able to answer this question. If I am, and before I go on, if I am... You've gone to college, and you have a roommate in college who is a skeptic, or an agnostic, or an atheist. And he or she's asking you this very simple question. Hey, I see that you go to church, you believe in God. Can you please explain to me, or prove to me, or discuss with me, why do you believe in God? Does he exist? I don't believe he does. And if you believe he exists, tell me why do you believe he exists? Now, this is when I want you to respond and raise your hand and tell me, why do you think God exists, if I am your roommate asking this question? Anyone? I believe God exists because... And don't say because my mom and dad are Christians. Why do you think God exists? Come on, guys.
Universe,
when it created itself. Very good. Very good. The creation of the universe. Yeah. Okay. Where did it come from? And you can have
logical
that.
Explanation.
What?
The logical explanation. Of what?
Hope. Oh, now you're getting deep. I like that. I like the explanation of hope. You can expound on that. Yes, sir.
Miracles.
How do you explain miracles? But you have first you have to prove that miracles do occur, and then you can have an explanation. Yes. What else? Yes, sir. There is your voice. I can't hear you. Very good. Your design, your biological design, your eye, your heart, and all of these things. So where did the world come from? Where did you come from? How are you designed? Yes. Anybody else? I'm not gonna pick on you, Kazisa. If I ask you why do you believe in God, what do you say?
You don't know? Okay.
Anybody else? Yes, sir.
Something that might not sound very logical to others.
It's okay. It's okay.
My intimate relationship. Day-to-day.
Very good, your intimate relationship. But this is subjective.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's subjective. It has to do with you. I, as a Buddhist, I believe in nirvana and all of these. I have an intimate relationship with my inner consciousness. So you see, it's subjective, yeah. But I want something that is objective, something that is beyond my feelings and your feelings, something that we both can agree upon. Yes, Mina? I'm sorry, Amir.
It's easier to explain the universe fully God than that one. It's more logical to say that from the beginning.
Very good. Very good. And this,
what's your name?
Maria?
Marie.
This is what Marie just said. We're the universe. The universe with God or without God. Excellent. These are all excellent points. Yes, sir.
There's a big difference between good and bad. And that's where it comes from.
Say more.
Like good, like the reason that there is good and bad is not just like one way of acting. Because there is a God.
Excellent. So the existence of evil in the world, believe it or not, points to the existence of good. And the existence of good points to the existence of God. You know, God and good are the same root word. Okay? Yes?
Why is it that they can put off that God doesn't exist while they can believe that we were made out of nothing?
Repeat that again.
Why is it that they can put off that God doesn't exist? Yes. While saying that we were created out of nothing, right?
Excellent. Very good question. See, now we're talking, I would say philosophy, but we're talking reason and logic. Very good question. We'll discuss all these questions in details as we move along. Great. There are seven, there's more. There's, I think, 24 questions or 24 arguments that I was able to put together that point to the existence of God without using the scriptures whatsoever. But I selected seven. We may not be able to cover all seven this weekend. We'll probably cover three or four, but maybe next year or next couple of years we can cover the other three or four questions. Where did the universe come from? Questions of origin. Where did the universe come from? Question that we will discuss in details. Not only cosmologically, questions of origin, but biologically, where did I come from? The two different entities, the universe and human life, where did it come from? Number three, is there a designer behind the design? Do we see design in the world, the laws of nature, and so on and so forth? Is there a designer behind this design? The question, who determines right and wrong, like you said? Evolution determines right and wrong. Society determines right and wrong. Who determines morality and ethics, akhlaq, so on and so forth? Why am I here? And this is an existential question. It's a question that has to do with my inner existence. Why am I here? What's the purpose of life? Okay. Where do I go when I die? Questions of destiny. I asked she used to be a Coptic Orthodox, but unfortunately she fell prey to other philosophies. Have you heard of the New Age movement? Have you heard Deepak Chopra, Wayne Dyer, all those folks, Oprah Winfrey? Anyways, I believe in this inner consciousness and how you can be your own God and so on and so forth. So I asked this youth, and I asked her, and I said, where are you going when you die? She goes, I will cease to exist. In other words, I'm done. I'm just a collocation of molecules, atoms, that came together, and my brain is nothing more than just some chemical reactions, and my thoughts are the misfiring of these chemical reactions, and when I die, when my soul dies, I die, and there's no more me. There's no more self. Extinction of self. Now that answers your first point, which is the mystery of hope. Hope beyond the grave. Didn't you say that? Logical explanation of hope. And then finally, why is there so much evil in this world? That could be, I just came from Calgary a couple of weeks ago, and we had a conference on that very question. Entire conference was the problem of evil and suffering. It's a very relevant problem. And this is what is also called in the apologetics field the rock of atheism. Atheists hold on to this problem as their backbone for their argument. I don't believe in God that allows the tsunamis, the earthquakes, and the killing of innocent people. My next door neighbor's cousin, who's 5 years old, he just died of cancer last week. I don't believe in a God that allows these things to happen. You see, problem of evil and suffering. But believe it or not, this problem of evil and suffering points to God rather than against God. So these are the seven questions that we would like to answer and to discuss in details. We will cover just a few of them, God willing, this weekend. First question, where did the universe come from? And there are four explanations or four possible answers for this question. There's no fifth, there's no sixth, or maybe there's a fifth, and I'll mention it to you very briefly, but it doesn't constitute a real answer for this question. One possibility is that the universe came from nothing. The universe came from nothing. Or it is self-made, it created itself. Or it has always existed. The universe is eternal. It's eternal. It's always been there. Or the universe is created. These are four explanations to this question. Where did the universe come from? Now, I like to, when I talk about things like that, I like to have kind of methodical thinking. In other words, you know, let's do the process of elimination. Let's take the first option and discuss it. Does it make sense? No, it doesn't. Let's move to the next option so that you can have some building blocks in your mind so that when you are discussing these things, you are organized in your thoughts as you put these thoughts into graceful arguments. Okay? Graceful arguments. So, let's look at the first one. Did it come from nothing? Now you tell me. Any of you heard of Lawrence Krauss? Any of you heard of Richard Dawkins? You've heard of Richard Dawkins? You have. You nodded. Good. You're going to hear this name quite a bit. Richard Dawkins is the he's an English biologist who I would say is the god of atheism. He's the most renowned figure on the face of Earth. Debunks or that is very anti-theistic in his writings and in his speeches and talks and so on and so forth. You'll hear this name quite a bit. Now, on college campuses, his name is littered all over the place. Richard Dawkins, the god of atheists. If you're an atheist, your pope would be Richard Dawkins. Very vocal and very antagonistic towards believers. Have you heard of Sam Harris? Richard Dawkins, Sam Harris, Christopher Hitchens, all of these big names that have written books, bestsellers, and they're all on college campuses. So if you're in college, you will get introduced to Richard Dawkins, Christopher Hitchens, and Sam Harris. And if you're not in college and you're going to college, you will meet these names. You will come across these names. So let's equip ourselves so that we are prepared when we hear these names and philosophies and so on and so forth. So Lawrence Krauss, he is the Richard Dawkins from the physics perspective. So Richard Dawkins is a biologist, Lawrence Krauss is a physicist. Lawrence Krauss wrote a book called The Universe from Nothing. He's a theoretical physicist and professor at Arizona State University. By the way, this book, New York Times bestseller, whatever you call it, New York Times bestseller or something? Yeah. It's an icon for atheists. This is the Bible for atheists. Now we've found the answer we've been looking for. Where did the universe come from? Lawrence Krauss came up with his theory. It came from nothing. They're now happy. They have the answer that they were looking for. Dr. Krauss, he asserts that the universe came from nothing, not from God. He said, one of the things about quantum mechanics, which I'm not sure what that is not only can nothing becomes something, nothing always becomes something, says Dr. Krauss. Nothing is unstable. Nothing will always produce something in quantum mechanics. In other words, given enough time, this nothingness will eventually become something. This is his theory. And he said quantum mechanics endorses this theory. And he wrote a book called The Universe from Nothing. I would love if, after this lecture tonight, if you have time, if you have 6 minutes to spare, I have a video clip. Have you heard of Stephen Colbert? You have heard of him, okay. He hosted Lawrence Krauss, and it's a very comical, very funny video clip I'd love to share with you if you guys have time after this lecture, between Lawrence Krauss and Stephen Colbert. Anyways, it turns out, I'm not going to get into the details of the book, but it turns out that this nothing, or Krauss's definition of nothing, is not the nothing from which the universe originated. So he had basically, he committed in philosophy a fallacy that we call equivocation fallacy. It's a different definition that he has of nothing. And that happens all the time when we're dealing with atheists. You know what equivocation fallacy means? If I say, for example, I have a PhD in philosophy. I am a doctor in philosophy. Because I am a doctor, I can prescribe medication. Wait a minute, but that's not the doctor that can prescribe medication. Do you see? That's equivocation. So I'm using the same term to mean two different things. So he's using the same term nothing to mean two different things. His nothing actually means something. Do you get it? So it's not really nothing as we understand, which is a vacuum of nothingness. It is actually something. He just chose to call it nothing. But then again, the question remains, where did that nothing come from if it is actually something? Anyways, he was refuted by David Albert. He wrote an article in New York Times. This is the reference of the article. And then he basically said, I'm going to share with you just a slide, the statement. All there is to say about this, what Dr. Krauss said, as far as I can see, is that Krauss is dead wrong, and his religious and philosophical critics are absolutely right. David Albert is an atheist, by the way. But he's also a renowned figure in quantum mechanics and physics and all of that. And he said, wait a minute, Dr. Krauss, you don't know what you're talking about. Okay, and this is a colleague of his. So, can the universe come from nothing? Let's see what Robert Jastrow, who's an agnostic astronomer, physicist, cosmologist, and a leading NASA scientist, in his book, In God and the Astronomer, he said, the creation of matter out of nothing would violate the principle of the conservation of matter and energy, which states that matter and energy can be neither created nor destroyed. Matter can be converted into energy, and vice versa. But the total amount of all matter and energy in the universe must remain unchanged forever. It is difficult to accept a theory that violates such a firmly established scientific fact. And I'm going to share with you, by the way, a lot of quotes and quotations from subject matter experts in the field. These are people that invested their lives in researching, their physicists and biologists and chemists and cosmologists that spent 30, 40, 50 years of their lives studying and researching the origin of the universe and the origin of human life. So I'd like to share with you some excerpts from what they have said and came up with their research, okay, to add some credibility to the discussion. And they all, by the way, share one thing in common. All the people that I selected to share quotations from are all atheists, okay? So they're not, there's no bias, we can say this because he's a Christian and so on and so forth. Robert Jastrow is an agnostic astronomer. And one thing also they have in common, because of their research and scientific study, and they are very honest in this research and scientific study, as they are atheists, after their research, they became believers in God due to their scientific research and study. All of these folks that I will mention to you. He also said, for the scientist who has lived by his faith in the power of reason, the scientist that lived by his faith or her faith in the power of reason, the story ends like a bad dream. He has scaled the mountains of ignorance. He is about to conquer the highest peak. As he pulls himself over the final rock, he is greeted by a band of theologians who have been sitting there for centuries. How true is that? Now I realized, after my 30 years of research, there must be a God. And after he uncovers this final rock, he realizes all the theologians, these theologians, we can call them the church fathers, have been sitting there for years. So did it come from nothing? Any of you watched the Sound of Music, the movie Sound of Music? It's a classic. I hope you all have watched it. Who's your favorite singer of the Sound of Music? Julie Andrews. What's your favorite song? Nothing.
Nothing comes.
Nothing comes from nothing. Nothing ever.
Ever will.
Very good. Very good. So nothing comes from nothing. Even Julie Andrews says that in the Sound of Music. Logically and reasonably, nothing can come from nothing. You see? So I think the first option, it's pretty easy to refute. Nothing can come from nothing. So universe could not have come, could not have been created from nothing. What's the second option? Self-made. Now I want you to think with me. This is easy to refute too. Think logically. Could the universe have created itself? Yeah, I gotta shake your hand, Amir. Right on. Now repeat what you said.
It would have had to be there to create itself in the first place.
Very good. And could it have been there to create itself?
No, it's a never-ending cycle.
Never-ending cycle. See, it's all logic. For a thing to create itself, it must first be. But wait a minute. It must be and not be in the same time, in the same space, in the same manner. How can a thing be and not be in the same time? That's a logical impossibility. You see, for you to create yourself, you have to first be. You have to exist prior to yourself. How can you exist prior to yourself? It's impossible from a reasonable perspective. So the universe could not have created itself because it must have existed preceding to itself or prior to itself. Okay? So that's easy to refute. It must have, the universe, it would have had to exist and not exist at the same time, and that's, again, a logical impossibility. Easy to say no to that. But here is the most commonly used explanation for the universe by atheists. The universe has always been there. It's eternal. Now I want you to tell me, is it eternal or is it not? Has the universe always existed? This view was held by, I would say, 90% of atheists up until 15, 20 years ago, when new scientific discoveries surfaced. But why do you think the universe could not have been eternal? Yes, sir?
All things must terminate, so if you do carbon dating...
I just want to try.
All things must terminate,
yes.
If you do carbon dating,
mm-hmm. Perfect! All things must terminate. What scientific theory or law is that? Okay, good. Think physics. You're right. You're absolutely right. All things must terminate. All things must... I'll give you a key word. All things must come to entropy. Any of you heard of entropy? What is that? What is that? Thermodynamics. Exactly. The second law of thermodynamics says that we are moving from order to this order. We're moving from a state of living, or a universe that is hospitable to human life, into a state of desolation. In other words, the world as we know, the universe as we know it, will eventually become what? Dark, desolate, and cannot sustain human life. Eventually it will be there. That's the second law of thermodynamics. That's a scientific law. I'm not making it up. Actually, I'll show you a picture of it. I don't understand it. I'm not a physicist, but I'm just taking their word for it. This is the second law of thermodynamics, and this is what it says. That the world, the universe, as a created matter, will eventually reach entropy and desolation. Let me share with you a few other folks and what they said. Oops. If you've heard of Immanuel Kant, the philosopher, this is his assertion that the universe is eternal, and many atheists kind of jumped on this bandwagon, thing that is eternal. Arthur Eddington, he's a British astronomer, astrophysicist, mathematician, philosopher of science, and so much more. He's got all kind of degrees in the world. He's an atheist, but a true scientist to his discipline. This is what he said. The universe is running down, and if it is running down, there must have been a time when it was fully wound up. Makes sense. If it's running down, it must have been wound up. Now, somewhere between the beginning of time and the present day, we must place the winding up of the universe. When did that occur, and who or what wound up the universe? There must have been something or someone beyond the universe that actually wound up the universe. And this is the conclusion he came up with. You see? Stephen Hawking. Any of you, have you seen the movie Theory of Everything. Any of you seen the Stephen Hawking? It's based on his life. He's a theoretical physicist, and he's got to get all kind of degrees possible in the world. He said the conclusion of this lecture, he gave this lecture on his 70th birthday in England. And he said, the conclusion of this lecture is that the universe had not existed forever. That rather, the universe and time itself had a beginning in the Big Bang. A point of creation would be a place where science broke down. One would have to appeal to religion and the hand of God. He's an atheist, but this is what he said. Yes, sir? He is an atheist, yes. But through, again, through his thinking, and or research rather, and his studies, is becoming more and more open to the idea of a divine being that intervened in the creation of the world. Yes?
He says appeal to the religion of the God. Does it mean like the theory of evolution is too big to believe in to the extent where we have to believe to someone that has created it?
Yes. Yes. Something beyond matter and energy and time and chance, which are the pillars upon which evolution or Darwinian evolution is based upon. Something beyond that. Okay? Something immaterial. Something metaphysical. You see? Outside of the physical realm of this world. Alexander Billington, he's a professor of physics. Again, and I'm giving you all these credentials of these folks so you know who you're listening to. Okay? He said, all the evidence we have says that the universe had a beginning. Pretty straightforward statement. Oh, again, he's an atheist, but a true scientific researcher. So there is a beginning to this universe. Let's now talk philosophically speaking. Think with me. Forget science. Science says the universe had a beginning. Forget science. Let's look at philosophy. And I wrote this down so that you can follow the train of thought. Now, there could not have been, think with me, there could not have been an infinite number of moments before today. There could not have been an infinite number of moments before today, or else today would not have come. You see? Think with me. By definition, an infinite cannot be past. It has no beginning, it has no end. So if there were infinite number of moments before today, we would not have arrived at today. But since the moments before today have passed, i.e., we arrived to today, therefore it follows that there must only have been a finite number of moments before today. Does that make sense? Yes, sir.
How about if time is man's creation?
Very good. We can respond to that as well. Man is a space-time, is a product, or I should say product, man lives in a space-time continuum. You are governed by time and space. If you are governed by time and space, you could not have created either. You see what I'm saying? Because you're governed by it. The theory of relativity, that is. Yes. And this was if you study the theory of relativity, you will understand exactly that's not what he meant, that man created time, because you are under the subjection of time. You could not have created time and become under its subjection in the same way, philosophically speaking. You see? So, does that make sense? And if it doesn't, it's okay. At least we can appeal to the second law of thermodynamics and several other scientific research and study that says, that indicate the universe must have had a what? A beginning. And if it had a beginning, who is the beginner of the beginning of the universe? That's the question that no one, until this very day, could come up with an answer to. Yes, sir.
They say the sun is a star.
Ali Sotak.
They say the sun is a star.
Yes.
They say in a couple billion years, the sun will eventually eat the earth and eat Mars and everything.
Yes.
Doesn't that mean like men?
Yes. And that's precisely what we're saying. The Earth as we know it, the universe as we know it will come to an end eventually. There are several scientific laws that have come up in the past, or have been scientifically proven, I should say, in the past decade or two, that point to the finality of the universe, or the universe is going to go to reach an end sometime. And think about it. If I am eternal, and I eventually will reach a point of entropy or non-existence, I would have reached that point by now. And if I were to walk long enough, I will eventually reach this wall. Okay? Eventually I reach this wall. If I have been, it doesn't matter how slow I'm walking, if I'm walking that slow, after 5 years, I will reach this wall. Now, if I have been forever walking, don't you think I would have reached this wall by now? That's exactly what I'm saying. Is that if the universe has been eternal, it would have reached entropy by now. Okay, so, conclusion. Process of elimination. Process of elimination. If the universe did not come from nothing, we understand that it could not have come from nothing. Is this clear? Does it make sense that it could not have come from nothing? Okay? And it's not self-made or self-caused. And it's not eternal. What's the other option? It must be created. There are some that come up with a fifth alternative or a fifth explanation, but I didn't want to even share it because it's so ridiculous. People sometimes say, oh, the universe is an illusion. To them, I say, great, then you must be also an illusion, then we also must be an illusion, then the question is also an illusion, then who's asking the question? It's not worth the effort to even answer. But if the universe is not eternal, did not come from nothing, is not self-made, then it follows that it is what? Created. The universe must have been created. The second question. Well, before I give you the second question, follow the evidence. Since all the evidence shows that the universe had a beginning, the theists, the believers, are the ones who are following the evidence where it points. The believers in God are the ones who are following the evidence. The atheists, what do they have? They simply have blind faith, hoping that one time or sometime in the future, science will come up with an explanation to the origin of the universe. And this is what Richard Dawkins had said, and this is what leading atheist thinkers have asserted, that we have faith that science eventually will give an answer to the origin of the universe. Now, who has more faith than the other? The theists, the believers, seem to be the ones who are following the evidence where it leads, rather than having blind faith in science. You see? What? Yes, sir.
I'm sorry.
I think that science is an illusion, probably.
Absolutely. Science and religion, and we can talk a little bit more about science and religion. And are they complementary? Do they complement one another? Are they friends or foes? But they, of course, they deal with different realms of studies, but they do not contradict one another. As a matter of fact, for you to be a true scientist, you must somehow believe in the laws of nature and the creator of this nature. True scientist, if you're a true scientist, you will eventually use this science to become a believer in God.
George, the reason you pull is, why is it actually presented in the opposite way in the colleges, in the community? Why is it always presented that the believers are not the scientific thinkers,
yes,
and the opposite, and we have to defend scientifically. Why is it,
yes.
yeah, reversed this way?
Excellent, excellent question. And the reason why, Abuna, is that oftentimes when believers like us are asked questions of this nature, we resort to one thing. Have faith. Just have faith. Faith is a central component in our lives, of course. But it doesn't mean to have blind faith. We have to have faith that is based on evidence. Christ himself, in John chapter 5, he used evidence. He was the greatest apologist. And I can give you examples of how Christ used apologetics in convincing or evangelizing or preaching his message. He said in John chapter 5, he appealed to witnesses, he appealed to his works, he appealed to Moses, he appealed to the testimony of the Father. He's using evidence. So the reason I would say for us as Christians, we shouldn't just undermine any arguments by saying have faith. We should intellectually, reasonably, and logically have a discussion with others. So that's my experience, is that we always resort to faith, and they think that this is a cop-out. This is just because you don't know what to say, you just say have faith. But that's not the case. I'm sorry, before you raise your hand, there was someone back there that raised. Okay, go ahead.
What I don't understand, and I'm not sure if we can understand it, is like we know there's a beginning of the universe and we know it's going to end. That's what Tom says. How do we understand what there was before the universe? Like in terms of what was God, like how long
what was he doing?
There, and afterwards, like after, like what is like forever? Like,
very good, very good. Your question implies one thing, just so that you can listen to the question you asked. It implies that the element of time existed before the creation of the universe, and that is not the case. You see? So when we ask, what was God doing before he created the universe? Simply nothing, because there was no what before and what after. The expression before and after can only make sense in the passage of time. But time, that component of time, is not eternal. Because if time is eternal, then time would be God. Fam Asli? Time is not co-eternal with God. God is beyond space and time. He created the universe in space and time. Fam Asli? It's difficult for us to think about. I'll tell you why. And let me just pause and explain this concept of time. For us as human beings, and I think this may... Oh, he left. Okay. This may shed some light on how we think of time and how God thinks of time. For us human beings, we are creatures in space and time. In other words, can you be here now and be here tomorrow at the same time? Of course not. You can only be in the what? Present. Only in the present. Your existence is only in the present. You have some recollection of the past, and you have nothing of the future. Do you know what you're going to do next week? Maybe you have some plans, but you don't know what you're going to do next week. So you live in a space-time continuum in a line. Imagine that you have a line that begins with the past, ends with the future, and you are somewhere in the middle. And that point is moving, ever moving. Those 5 seconds I just asked you the questions had actually died in the past, you see? And then you're ever moving in the present, in that continuum. Now, God doesn't have that line, past, present, future. God has a dot on that line. And that dot is the past, present, future infused into one single momentary time. You see? So that's why we as creatures cannot think how God perceives time. You can't think about that because you're bound by it. You have to be outside of it. Like the fish in the water will never think it's wet. Have you ever seen a fish in a fishbowl? Does it think it's wet? No, because it's always in the water. When it gets out of the water, then it will realize that, oh, wait a minute, I was actually wet in the water. But as long as you are in time, you will never think beyond that which you are under and subjected under. Okay, let's move on real quick. Just a couple of humorous slides. Hey brother, do you think there is life? Oops, that's not what I wanted to do. There's life after death? do you believe in mom? Nah, I don't believe these things. I'm an atheist. I mean, have you ever seen mom? Basically, if there was no moms, he wouldn't be here. The atheist, and likewise, the atheist is using the capacity of his or her power of reason, which is a gift from God, to denounce the gift giver, God himself. It's like a scent rejecting the existence of the flower, where the scent had come from. You see, where do the atheists come up with all these thoughts and reasoning and thinking? They have acquired, or they were given these thoughts by God, using these, not thoughts, these capacities of thinking by God, using this capacity to deny his existence, similar to this baby in his mother's womb. Because he hasn't seen mom, he claims that mom doesn't exist, not knowing that mom is the reason for his existence. All right, so we expounded on the first question, where did the universe come from? No one, and I've spoken many atheists on college campuses, when I go to on-campus ministries in Berkeley, if you've heard of UC Berkeley, UCLA, and all of these renowned universities, and they're very ruthless, by the way. They're very liberal, and they will shred you to pieces if you're not really on point with your arguments. They're not going to say, oh yes, we believe in Christ, let's go to church and be baptized. They don't do this on college campuses. And I've spoken to so many atheists that will, not one of them will be able to answer this very simple question. Where did the universe come from? The only answer is science will sometime find a solution or an answer to this question. But we do have the answer. Yes, sir. See, raise your voice. I'm sorry, I can't hear you. That time is an illusion? Time is an illusion? Then you would be an illusion, because you are a creature in time. Right. Sure. But as far as you and I know, as far as you're concerned, as far as I'm concerned, we do live in this passage of time and bound by it. It could be an illusion to someone who lives in Venus, if, or Saturn, whatever, if there is such a life. But as far as you and I are concerned, we are bound by time. And as far as we are bound by time, we have to believe that time is an actual entity. You see? As far as we are concerned. Other possibilities are none of our concerns. Therefore, it could be an illusion to them, but it's not an illusion to me and you. Some say, I don't want to talk about evolution, because that's another convention altogether. But some may say, well, you know what? Let me explain this, this second question. Where, now we talked about the first question, cosmologically, where did the universe come from? Biologically, where did I come from? Where did you come from? We'll explain the universe, fine, God, some divine being created the universe. What about you and me? Where did I come from? Some people may say, we'll resort to what? The very common thing. Huh? Monkeys? La, yani, scientifically, evolution. مش كده? Evolution. احنا, we came from evolution, just have some protein, given enough time with some matter and energy and all of these things, and given the right conditions, boom, here we are, primordial soup, and out of this primordial soup, human beings have existed. You see? Now, did evolution actually attest to that? Absolutely not. Here's what I want to give you, a rule of thumb about evolution. Evolution explains the survival of species, but does not explain the arrival of species. You see, there's a big difference between survival and arrival. It explains how, by mutation, and how the survival of the fittest, how we have developed or evolved and whatever. But it doesn't explain that fundamental question, where did it all come from? And that's explained. Did I just happen, or am I designed? Am I a product of chance, or am I deliberately designed? Am I an accident, or am I wanted? And if you've read the book, The Purpose Driven Life, I think Rick Warren speaks, any of you heard of The Purpose Driven Life? Rick speaks about this point extensively. Here is what Sir Fred Hoyle, again another atheist, evolution from space, most noted English astronomer, this is what he said: biochemical systems are exceedingly complex, so much that the chance of being formed through random shuffling is insensibly different from zero. There must be an intelligence which designed the biochemicals and gave rise to the origin of life. There must have been a designer to life to have given rise to the existence of life. George Wald, also a Harvard professor, elected to the National Academy of Sciences, awarded the Nobel Prize for Physiology and Medicine, he said, since life cannot come from non-life, the only logical conclusion is that life was created supernaturally. Keep in mind, all of these folks I am using to quote are all atheists that have in turn become believers because of their scientific studies.
So they accept these words
As a matter of fact, they see that these words are the words that kind of were more like the aha moment, the revelation that led them. This is the conclusion of their studies. After they've concluded, they said, well, you know what? I cannot live with integrity with myself, knowing that my scientific research points there and my heart points to the atheism. So they couldn't live with themselves, and they were honest. And that's what I'm only asking for those atheists or skeptics or agnostics, to be intellectually honest with their studies and see where the evidence points, as I mentioned to you. Yes.
That there is a God, or in God himself?
Very good. Excellent question. Baby steps. This aha moment made them believe that there is a God. They had faith that God exists. Once they believed that God exists, a little bit more, delving into who that person is, became believers in God. See, there's a belief that and a belief in. Two different things. When you believe that God exists conceptually with your mind, there must have been a designer. There must have been an intelligence. I believe conceptually, cerebrally, that God exists. Then I can study who this God is. And once I know who that is as a person, then I can believe in him with my being, with my heart, and have faith in him. Do you see the difference? So it goes from the mind into the heart. I don't want to keep going, but Anthony Flew is someone that I wanted to share with you. Yes, sir. Anthony Flew is someone that I wanted to share with, to at least mention to you. He's one of the most renowned atheists in the 20th century. He said, biologists' studies of DNA have shown, by the almost unbelievable complexity of the arrangements which are needed to produce life, that intelligence must have been involved. Anthony Flew was a renowned atheist. I would encourage you to go on YouTube, and type Anthony Flew versus William Lane Craig. Any of you heard of William Lane Craig? He's a pretty renowned apologist. I'm proud to say that he was one of my teachers for 8 months or so. He has a debate between Anthony Flew, or there's a debate between Anthony Flew and Bill Craig, or William Lane Craig. Very interesting debate on YouTube. It's about a 4-hour long debate, but it's in separate sessions, and you can download it and see. Anthony Flew, one of the most renowned atheists for the past 40, 50 years, recently, he wrote a book 20 years ago called There Is No God. A few years ago, he wrote another book called There Is a God. And he left the same cover that he had 20 years ago, but he crossed no and put an A on top of it. Thinking again through his scientific research and studies. The law of biogenesis by Louis Pasteur, he's a French chemist and biologist, says what? This is a law of science. Living beings or living things can only come from other living things. Life can only come from life. It's a scientific law. Life can only come from life. But who produced life? Who is the first originator of life? Okay, let me ask you this question. Who possesses the properties of life? Who possesses the properties of life?
Yeah.
It must be someone, not just a living being, but a what? Not just a living being, a life-giving being. Two different things. That's why the priest in the confession, in the liturgy, he holds the pattern of the body and he says, I believe that this is what? The living body? Not the living body. The life-giving body. In other words, God, our God, is not just a living God, but a life-giving God. He bestows life. He gives life because he possesses the properties of life. So there must have been a life-giving being to produce or to give forth properties of life. Look at these two snowmen. Don't be absurd. Nobody made us. We evolved by chance from snowflakes. Is it possible? Is it reasonable? Is it logical? Of course not. There must have been someone that produced these. So I have objections, and these are objections I've collected from atheists across the years. Three objections, and we'll end with these because I think we have 10 more minutes, or maybe 7 more minutes. I want to be respectful to your time. But I have a couple of objections. I think it's equally as important to see what the other side thinks so that we can be equipped to logically converse with them. I don't want to say argue because it has bad connotation, but converse with them. Before we go to the answering objections, any questions or any objections from you, or questions or comments? Is that making sense to you all? Okay. First objection. You say everything needs a cause. A very common question. Who caused God? Who made God? I'm sure you've heard this question before. You say everything traces its existence back to what I would like to call the first cause. The first cause. They have in Arabic, al-illa al-ula. Correct me if I'm wrong, the word, if I'm saying anything wrong. Okay? The first cause. Well, who created that first cause? Who created God? And this is the question that Richard Dawkins had, and based on this question, he wrote a book called The God Delusion. The God Delusion. He says, those Christians, they're ignorant, because they think everything was created by God, but they haven't answered this one question. Who created God? What do you tell me? What do you say? Who created God? Exactly. You can ask who created the God, who created God, who created God. Yes, but you can go to infinitum. But who created God? Come on, guys. Help me out.
God is not a creation.
Good. Say more.
He's not creator.
God is not a creation. He is?
The creator.
By?
By definition.
Yes, when I say God, implied, presupposed in my definition of God is that he is the uncreated being. It's part of his character or characteristic. But let's say something else. I mean, yeah, okay. Tell me more. This could be a cop-out to some atheists. Who created God? Now, I want to give you some tactic when you answer questions that are coming your way. And maybe we can leave this for Sunday when we talk about evangelism and sharing our faith and how we can be light and salt and all that. When you are asked a question, and this is, by the way, common to all, especially if we come from Egyptian backgrounds, when we ask the questions, we're always quick to what? To answer the question, because we know everything about everything. Okay? Medicine, law, science, doesn't matter. We know everything about everything. It's very bad to say, I don't know, especially if you come from where I come from. Forgive me, I don't mean to. But we say we're quick to answer questions. But have we paused long enough to listen to the question and see if the question itself self-destructs? Do you see what I'm saying? Sometimes we need to look not at the question, but at the questioner. What we need to answer is not so much the question, we need to answer the questioner who lies behind the question. Not lies as in, but stands behind the question. You see? For example, I had a question from the audience. It says, what does the church believe when it comes to suicide? I can say, oh yeah, well, you know, there are references in the scriptures, the church fathers, you know, St. Basil said this, and St. Gregory said that, and St. Pope Shenouda said that, and all these things. I can answer the question. But I failed to answer the questioner. There is a deeper problem, a more existential problem behind the question, not so much the question itself. Do you see what I'm saying? So when somebody asks you a question, think of the question being asked before you are quick to answer that question. Anyway, let me digress. But when someone says, who created God? What's implied in that question? Yes, what else? What is the key word? Who created God? What is implied in this question is that God is subject to creation, which implies that God is subject to the law of causality, which means that there is a cause and there's an effect. There's a creator and a created. Do you see? And the law of causality can only exist within the realm of time. If there's no time, there's no causality. If there's no causality, there's no creation. If there's no creation, then God is the only creator. Do you get it? Let me give you another example, illustration. We say, who caused this or that? Who caused this clicker? Well, someone who manufactured this clicker somewhere in a factory, some place. I imply that this clicker had a beginning in time. In other words, 500 years ago, this clicker didn't exist. Would you agree? Right? So I say, who caused it, implying that there must have been a what? A beginning to its existence. If there's no beginning to its existence, then this would not have been caused or created. So what I mean to say is this. Everything that is caused to exist must have had a beginning in time. And because they had a beginning in time, they were subjected to the component or element of time. But God is what? By definition, beginningless, without beginning. Therefore, he's beyond time. Therefore, the law of cause and effect doesn't apply to him. Therefore, he's not created. Therefore, he's not caused. The question self-destructs. You know what? I'll give you another example, illustrate my question, my point. Can I ask you, Amir, who is the bachelor's wife? What kind of question is that? Who's the bachelor's wife? Well, wait a minute. That's a logical question. Because what a bachelor, by definition, is not married. So because he's not married, by definition, he doesn't need a wife. He doesn't have a wife. So when I say who created God, it's exactly who is the bachelor's wife. What do you mean who created God? God, by definition, is timeless, beginningless. He's not created, doesn't fall under the realm of creation and time. Does it make sense now? Let me illustrate a little bit more. And by the way, this question could be asked by adult or by a little boy. If you're a Sunday school teacher or servants, I am sure. If you haven't, you will. My son, I have a 10-year-old and a 6-year-old. My 10-year-old, who they're here, by the way, they're gonna come on Sunday and take the blessings of the church and the baboons. He asked me this question, Dad, well, who made God? Because you tell me God is the, he did everything, made everything. Well, who made God? Well, you're not going to tell him time or causality. So what do you say to that little boy? I'll share with you as well in a second. Only things, I'm just going to now give you the textbook as I give some thought into this and wrote this down. And Aristotle, by the way, refers to this as the unmoved mover, if you want to study Aristotle's philosophy. Only things that had a beginning are caused. Only things that are caused are made. God, by definition, had no beginning beyond space and time. Therefore, since he had no beginning, he is uncaused. So the premise or the question is false without the dimension of time. Without time, there's no cause and effect. Just like we said, who created the uncreated? Stephen Hawking also said, many people do not like the idea that time has a beginning, probably because it smacks of divine intervention. He couldn't escape the fact that time did have a beginning. But people don't like to say that because it points to divinity and God. Some theological points I want to share with you is that God is uncaused because he is the being whose essence is in his existence. Or his essence is his existence. In other words, God exists necessarily. He must exist. He's the unmoved mover that gave rise. He's the first cause that gave rise to all the other effects. Let me skip through this. These are references. I said I'm not going to share with you biblical references, but I couldn't help it but give you some words from the scriptures. Therefore, do not be ashamed of the testimony of our Lord, according to his own purpose and grace, which was given to us in Christ Jesus when? Before time began, in 2 Timothy. Father, in John 17, the priestly prayer, Father, I desire that they also whom you gave me may be where I am, may be with me where I am, that they may behold my glory, which you have given me. When? For you loved me before the foundation of the world. Psalm 90, before the mountains were brought forth, or ever you had formed the earth and the world, even from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. And several other references. But let's ask the little boy. I'm going to show you a video clip in a second. When the little boy asks that question, what do you say? Anybody has any clever analogies? I couldn't think of anything but that. When it was Christmas time, and we had the train under the Christmas tree, and I asked my son, "Hey, you know, who pulls this last cart?" He said, "Well, the cart in front of it pulls it." I said, "Well, who pulls this one?" He said, "Well, this one pulls this one." "Well, what about this one?" He said, "Well, this one pulls this one." I said, "Well, what about the very first cart? Who pulls the first cart? What pulls the first cart?" He said, "It kind of pulls itself within itself." I said, "That's God. He kind of exists within himself. He pulls himself within himself. He has the power of existence within himself. He is caused by himself within himself." Okay? It resonated at least for a little bit until he goes to high school and college and we can talk about the law of causality. Just FYI. Anybody has any other explanations or illustrations? Okay. Let me... I want to be respectful of your time and remember a video clip I want to share with you about Stephen Colbert, and also there's a video clip about John Lennox who asked that question, who created God. Do you have time for it, or you want to? Okay, so let's go to that video clip. Let me give you a preface first. John Lennox, not John Lennon, John Lennox, okay, is a world-renowned scientist at Oxford University. He's a philosopher of science and professor of mathematics at Oxford. He debated Richard Dawkins a number of times. He's an authority figure when it comes to subjects of apologetics. He comments very briefly, I think it's a 3-minute video clip, on the who created God question. So let's see what he says.
This this question is extremely interesting because it's an illustration of a question that already rules out the explanation that's most likely to be true. Because the Christian claim is that God wasn't created. So if God was uncreated, in the beginning was the Word, and I'm coming to your 3-in-1 now, and I'm bringing it in obliquely. In the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He already was. So the central Christian claim is, and in Judaism and Islam, of course, equally, is that God is eternal. So the question, by definition, doesn't even apply to him. That's immensely important. The only way you can get anything out of it, then, in the negative sense, is to assume that everything is in the category of the creator, but that's just begging the original question. And the Greeks were interested in it. And that's why John's Gospel starts with those words. In the beginning, the Word already was. And then it says, all things came to be through him. The Greeks were interested in the question of two categories. The things that came to be, the created things, and the things that already were. And the question resolves down to this. Is there a thing or a being that never came to be? And that is the Christian claim, and he's called God. But there's a little controversy to this reason. Richard Dawkins, and I had a debate with him on this very topic in Oxford, and I said to him, Richard, you say that who created God is a legitimate question. I don't think it is, but let me assume now that it is. You believe that the universe created you. So I beg leave now to ask you, using your own question, who created your creator? I'm waiting still for the answer.
All right. Anyways, you see he's a very funny and clever man. Comments on the video? Funny, interesting, profound, I thought. Say the same thing we just discussed. Objection number two, I'll skip over. Objection number three. Type, I'll grant you that God created the universe. Fine. I'll go along with this assertion that God created the universe. But this doesn't prove a personal God. This can only prove it could be some kind of vague force or energy. I mean, if you watch Star Wars, you know, may the force be with you, and that force is God. It doesn't have to be the God of the scriptures. You guys call him Jesus. Could be a force, right or wrong? Wrong, of course, wrong. But why? Yes.
Because if the cause is there, the effect will be there over time. If the cause is there over time, then the effect will be there over time. And that means that the universe will be eternal, and the universe has a beginning.
Very good. Very good. Excellent point. Very good. You said it perfectly, so let me rephrase. So we know that there are two things that exist. We can categorize these two things as matter, or physical and metaphysical. Okay? In other words, mind or matter, material or immaterial. Okay? Things that have mind, intelligence, immaterial, metaphysical, and things that are matter, material, and physical. We know that one is not eternal, which is the matter, the physical, the material. By default and by definition, then, the other, which is the immaterial, the metaphysical, the mind, is eternal, because one must have preceded the other. Do you get it? Okay, that's one point. The other thing is that law of causality, again, I appeal to the law of causality, that says what? The effect cannot be greater than the cause. And that's a law of science and philosophy. The effect cannot be greater than the cause. We are what? The effect of a greater cause. We have what? Intelligence. We have reason. We have consciousness. So if the effect has reason, intelligence, and consciousness, the cause
must also have reason, intelligence, and consciousness. Do you get it? In other words, a piece of rock could not have created me, because a rock doesn't have intelligence, reason, and consciousness. Because I am the effect of a created thing or person. So that thing or person must at least have what I have, because the effect cannot be greater than its cause. Do you get it? Okay. So, let's look at the characteristics of the first cause. Follow the logic here with me. The first cause of limitless space and the effect, when I say effect, I mean the world, the universe, and us. If it's limitless space, then it must be infinite. The first cause of endless time must be eternal. The first cause of boundless energy must be omnipotent. The first cause of infinite complexity must be omniscient. The first cause of moral values must be good. The first cause of human integrity must be truthful. The first cause of human love must be loving. The first cause of life must be life-giving. I only see Christ as the answer. That's it. You got it. You can clap if you want, but you don't have to. Okay? No, I don't mean to say that. You were. But that's basically, these are the definitions of our God. And this is the world that we live in. This is the cause. And this is the, this is the effect. And that's the cause of the effect. All of these point to a personal, loving creator whom Christians worship, called the Lord, Savior, Jesus Christ. Does that make sense? You cannot tell me a force or energy created you and I with consciousness and reason and intelligence. I will close with this. In 1903, Herbert Spencer, who is a colleague of Charles Darwin, or a student, I should say, he was a British philosopher, a disciple of Charles Darwin, coined the term survival of the fittest. He's one of the great proponents of the theory of evolution, great scientist. I'm going to close with these two slides. He said this. He made a profound scientific statement. He said, everything in the universe can be explained by five basic things, and I want you to remember those five things with me. Space, matter, time, force, and action. Space, matter, time, force, and action. These are the five things, the quintessence, he called them, in philosophy, that explain everything in this universe. And he couldn't find a single answer that infuses all these five elements in this universe. Now, if you were to read Genesis 1:1, you'll see this. In the beginning, time, God, force, created, action, the heavens, space, and the earth, matter. And there you have the answer that Herbert Spencer was looking for. The answer is in the very first verse of the scriptures. Matter, time, force, action, and space. Everything, again, that scientists devoid of the scriptures are looking for, if they were to go back and read what the scriptures, what the God of the Christians have revealed about himself and about the world that he created, they will find their answers. And that's what Robert Jastrow said, that when he and other scientists climbed the mountain, when they uncovered the last rock, they realized that there is a band of theologians that have been sitting there for ages. So which one would you rather be? Deliberately created or blindly evolved? Which one of these will fulfill your meaning in life or your existential struggles in this life? Because if you came here by accident, I can remove you by incident if you stand in my way. But that's not the case. You did not come here by accident. You were deliberately created by a loving creator that bestowed his love upon you and gave you value and worth. And in summary, atheists simply say, I don't believe or I don't see any evidence of God, simply not because of the lack of evidence, but because of the suppression of evidence. I don't want to see evidence for God, rather than I can't see evidence for God. If you're an intellectually honest seeker, you will know that all the evidence in this world, and David said in the Psalm, what? The firmament, correct me, help me with the verse. What? السماوات والأرض إيه تخبر بعملي دي تحدث دماغ الله. Okay, the heavens and the earth point. And as a matter of fact, even a more deliberate verse in Romans chapter 1, verse 38, I believe, St. Paul says, the creation or the his divine attributes are clearly seen by the creation so that you are without an excuse. It's not the lack of evidence, it's the suppression of evidence. And I hope that with this, this is the end of part one. We will go to part two, three, four. Hopefully the remainder of the weekend. This gives us some equipping, some understanding about the origin of the universe and the origin of human life. Any comments, and glory be to God forever and ever, amen. Any comments, questions, please feel free to, and I have to apologize if I've taken a lot longer than I should have. Sorry if I took a lot of time. Just I want to be sensitive to your time. Any comments or questions? And if you don't want to answer the question out loud, please write these questions down. I will ensure that you come tomorrow and Sunday, so we'll answer those questions, God willing. If not tonight, we'll answer them tomorrow and or Sunday. Is that end of part one? Yes. Yes, sir. So you have to speak up so that we can all hear you and benefit. Some very good question. The majority are Christians. They're not Coptic Orthodox, but they're Christians. Some believe in some kind of divine being, but they are, yani, they're not quite there yet. Yani, grace of the Holy Spirit, yani, this work of the Holy Spirit, I mean, is working, but they haven't responded just yet. Yeah. So some are not. Here's the pragmatic, in my opinion, the pragmatic way of coming to know the Lord. First, you come to know that there is truth. Truth exists. There must be absolute truth. You believe that God exists. There is a being out there, a creator. Then you move from this notion or conviction that God exists into which God? Well, it must be a God, a personal God. Well, a personal God could be the God of Islam or the God of Judaism. Thank you. Well, then you dig a little deeper. Well, I see all these comparative religions. Well, which one of these is the true God? And then you begin delving into what must be, is it Christ? Is it Buddha? Is it Muhammad? Or is it Allah? You see? So there is a logical sequence of how you come to know that the true God is the God that you and I worship. Comments or questions? You know, we can actually turn on the light, if you don't mind, turn on the light. We don't need the slides anymore. I think it's in the second one. Yeah, perfect. Why not?
I have a question. Oh. What is the most common from people that you see turn from Christians, believers, they turn into atheists? Where does it usually start? Most common?
Yeah. This is what we're going to talk about tomorrow night. I think. Okay. I'll give you very briefly, there are several, but I can categorize them in three things. There are intellectual problems, okay, and there are emotional, psychological problems, and there are willful behavioral problems. So there are problems of the mind. Scientists usually have this obstacle. I cannot fathom that there is a God or science proves otherwise or what have you. So problems of the mind. I can't believe that actually God becomes a human being. It doesn't make sense. Scientifically, I can't comprehend that. So problems of the intellect. And then there are problems of the psyche and the emotions and the heart, which is, I'll give you an example. My next door neighbor's son died of cancer 5 years ago, and this is the problem of evil and suffering. And I feel that God is a very violent God, and the violence in the Old Testament, all these things affect my emotions and my heart. And when I was at church, I saw things that I didn't like, or when I said something, I didn't like, whatever. So it's an emotional problem or psychological problem. The third, which I think is the most common, which I believe is the primary reason for atheism, it's not so much a psychological, it's a moral issue, a behavioral issue. I don't want to believe in a God that will suppress my lifestyle. I want to be able to do whatever I want to do. You name it. Sex, drugs, alcohol, anything. I want to live my life. I don't want to believe in God that would make me feel guilty and change my lifestyle. I want to enjoy my life. So there's a moral level, and there's the psychological, emotional level, and there's the intellectual level. And there are three that compete with one another. Does that answer your question? Or you can go into details. There's a lot of other reasons, but that's kind of the overview. Any other questions? Comments? Yes, sir. Yes, I know him very well. He's a great, yes. Yes.
How is that really accurate based on treatment?
Yeah. Okay. Good question. There are two schools of thought, the young earth creationists and old earth creationists. Have you heard of these two schools of thought? Yeah. A little bit? That's what Hugh Ross was saying. I had this discussion with His Grace Bishop Yusuf and few other priests. Some believe that the earth is only 6,000 years old. Some believe that the age of the earth is only 6,000 years because from Adam to Christ, 4,000 years, Christ, and so on and so forth. Some others believe that the earth is actually 13 billion years, like science says, and they claim that the 6 days of creation were only metaphorical days. There were portions of time. They were not actually literally 24 hours. I tend to, and this is the discussion I had with Mba Yusuf, is that most of the Coptic, doctrine, if you will, believe in the latter, that Earth is not 6,000 years old. Earth could be 13 billion years old, and there's no, correct me if I'm wrong, Abuna, I'm just saying that what some discussions I had with a few bishops is that Earth could be as old as whatever science says, you know, carbon dating and all of these things, because the first 4 days of creation were not 24 hours. And the reason why is because the sun was created on the fourth day, and it's only through the sun that we get the 24-hour period. Well, what about the, you know, plus if you were to translate the word yom in Hebrew, yom does not only mean 24 hours or a day that has a night and day, but it could be a period of time, hukba, and what, you see, period of time. That period of time could be a million years or 10 billion years. So that's why, but there are also some priests that would say, I mean, you can go both ways. It's just I tend to favor. And if you read the Church Fathers, we had a research. I mean, His Grace Bishop Yusuf and I had a research on this. And some Church Fathers some say 6,000 years old, and some say millions of years old. But really, does it really matter? You see. Does it really matter? It's good for us to be able to speak intellectually with the scientific community. It's important because when you ascribe to religion and faith, it doesn't mean that you check your science out the door. You see? But some people are hung up on it too much, where I think there are the script or the Bible is not a scientific book. It is not a book of history or a book of biology or a book of science. You see? It's a book. It's a love letter from a creator to his creation. So so it's good to look at the scriptures from that perspective, not so much. It doesn't mean that it contradicts science. Absolutely not. But it's not solely based on science. Understood? Correct me if I'm wrong, Abuna.
No, I think that people don't have a concept of level from the Kiyah. It implies in here. As part of the monkey, it was implying from the creation of Adam rather than from the creation of
the universe. Perfect.
Yeah, that's right. Good point. So it could be from before Adam. The 6 days before Adam could have been 6 billion years. Yeah. Comments or questions? Yes.
Great.
Does the existence of God or proving the existence of God has anything to do that he still exists, like he sees, he hears us, he, like he's here, or he just created us and
that is
not, yeah.
Very good. There is a philosophy called deism, D-E-I-S-M, you can look it up. Deism says that God created us and then said, basically, peace out, I'm out. You know, you guys do whatever you want to do. I'm just in heaven and you're on earth and I have nothing to do with you. That's deism, and that's not what we believe in. We believe as far as who God is. We believe that God created us, is not part of this world as pantheists. Have you heard the word pantheism? Pantheists believe that God is part of this world, like he's part of this chair and this wall and all of this. God is the creator of this world. He is actively involved in his creation, yet he is not part of it. He is beyond it, but he's actively present in it through you and me. You see? Simply because it's you and me that are created in his image and likeness. So because we are created in his image and likeness, he is very actively involved in me and you through the Holy Spirit that he has given us. But as Christians, we can say it through the Holy Spirit. But as just, you know, skeptics or atheists, we say that this personal God, he created us and did not leave us alone. As a matter of fact, he is present. And our faith, our Christian faith, indicates, and you're going to hear this lecture tomorrow night, God willing, indicates that God is forever present in us in the most intimate way. How? The most intimate way he's present with us. Somebody said it. Communion. Who said communion? Yes. Perfect. The most intimate way, the creator, the first cause, all of these things we said, all of these philosophies we said, is actually coming to be into you so that you can be into him. The last word in John chapter 17, the priestly prayer, the last three words, and I in them. And that's what God wants to be in every one of us so that he can be, I mean, so that we can be in turn into him. And if you read the epistles to the Ephesians, you will read the words in him 38 times. That's the ultimate purpose of you and me, for you and me, is to be into God. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but it makes sense how we prove that God exists. But the other way, like to prove he's here and he hears us, you can really prove it. You can
yes.
feel it, but you can't prove it.
Yes.
If I don't believe in that, like...
Yes.
Well, remember when I said there are two different types, belief that and belief in. You believe that he exists, that's the first hurdle that you have to overcome. Believing in him, that's a different level. Different level that takes experience, it takes getting to know who he is, it gets getting to actually understand, love, and grow. And it's a whole different level, simply because this God is not some kind of abstract force. He is a person. And because he's a person, you can actually feel his presence subjectively. You see? For example, I can appeal to miracles. Miracles do happen. How do miracles happen? Because God intervenes in the laws of nature and actually reveals his presence. But yeah, that's kind of the next level. You believe he exists, and then you believe in him personally and existentially. Questions, comments? We can answer these two questions tomorrow, because that will take a little bit of time to talk about. Actually, we talk about the same thing almost. We talk about it's more scientific questions. Yeah, so we'll talk about these questions tomorrow. Any other comments about the existence of God? Tomorrow, God willing, we will talk. Just give you a quick sneak preview. We will talk about the design. If there's a design out there. And the big questions I want to ask, can we live a good moral life without God? We're almost done. I think we are done. If you want to stay, it's up to you. If you want to stay and watch this 5-minute video clip of Lawrence Krauss, go ahead. Oh, lights, yes, please, yes. But if you have to go, I want to, again, be respectful to your time. It's a 5-minute, it's funny, it's humorous, and Steve, is it Steve or Stephen? Stephen. Steve, I'm thinking of Stefan.
My staff in Curry, yeah. I'm missing the parade. I'm missing the parade to be with you guys. I'm a big Warriors fan, and the one that, of course, can be FIR too. Yes, right on. And he's a great guy. Great guy. Humble, devout Christian. And I attended two games of the finals, by the way, just so you know. I'm not just a bandwagon fan. But yeah. What is that? You're a Spurs fan? Leave us. I liked you. I liked you 5 minutes ago. But anyways, so Steph Curry is a devout Christian. And you know, the NBA, the commissioner, asked him not to mention Jesus in your talks, in your post game interviews, and he said, "I cannot not mention him because he is so integral, so intertwined in my life. I cannot not mention him." It's a great message. I let my son listen to this, and this is the best sermon he can hear. Anyways, let's watch. I can go on and talk about basketball for a long time. Let's watch the video clip.
Nothing. unstable. If you wait long enough, that kind of nothing will always produce particles. Will always produce particles. But what am I saying that it will? If you wait long enough, the laws of quantum tell us that particles will burp out of empty space and eventually fill up a universe. It's invaluable. Is it that to me? That sounds like the empty space may be empty to us, but it is some sort of membrane between us and some other reality.
No, there's nothing wrong. There's absolutely nothing there until there's something.
What's the second type of
that? Okay, well, if you don't apply that, then I can tell you, you might say, well, that's not nothing because there's space.
Yeah.
Well, it turns out if you apply quantum mechanics to gravity, then in fact, space itself becomes dynamical and universes, spaces themselves, and time can pop into existence where there was none before.
So in some theoretical end space, before the moment of creation, there can be no time and no space and no energy.
And no energy.
So then suddenly, from nowhere and from nothing, comes something and somewhere.
And all sorts of stuff. And it sounds like the ultimate free lunch. And
yes,
it is. And it really, what's remarkable is it's possible without any supernatural shenanigans. And
the reason this is set up with that.
Why?
Why is what you're doing, whatever this is? Because obviously, because I am not in the priesthood, I can't understand the scrolls on the blackboards you people down at. Where are you?
Well, that's why I wrote the book, so you could.
Where are you? You're not understanding.
There is a
okay. You priests of theoretical physics, you can explain to each other what you mean with your language of math. And I have to take that on faith.
No, in fact, you should be skeptical.
I am.
And in fact, you should be. That's why I try to find the arguments in the book that I will never read.
So, you should buy it.
Buy it is important.
Buy it is great. Why does what you're saying have to be an attack on my God?
It doesn't have to be an attack.
That's all you've done. You've attacked my God for the last 6 minutes.
No. You have all I've said is you don't need him.
That's an attack.
You're here to learn about yours. As we understand it, as we've changed our minds about the universe. We've learned that the universe is more remarkable than anything we ever thought before. And in fact, changing your mind and in fact being wrong is wonderful. You should try it sometime. It's really amazing. The fact that the universe is more remarkable than the fairy tales that were talked about by Bronze Age illiterate peasants before we knew the Earth.
We're not attacking at all.
Listen to this guy.
Okay. I don't even use the word belief. The point is there's no God. There's no need for God.
Is there God? Is there God?
It's unjustly. There's no evidence for God.
Okay.
There's no evidence for God.
I'm asking, if there is no God, okay, if there is no thing called God, if he is nothing, can't something come from him?
Did you get that? Listen to this. Anyways, I thought this was clever. If there's no thing called God, if there's nothing called God, then couldn't something come out of him? And then finally he relabeled the book as The Universe from God instead of from nothing. Anyways, I thought it was clever, humorous, a good video clip to end the night with. Yes, what more would?
Again, this guy did not seem like he's honest. I mean, how can we and someone believe that this is an argument that he can accept?
Yeah. Unfortunately, on college campuses in the world of academia, if you are standing behind a podium, you are given a divine somehow.
But this is the authority.
Divine authority, exactly. Yeah. And that's why I encourage, when I do the on-campus ministry, I encourage our youth, Christian youth, to always, not challenge all the time, but to be discerning, to discern what is it that they're being taught, and from what background and vantage point and perspective, and is all what's being said behind a podium on college campuses, is all divinely inspired, and do I have to take it as authority or not? So, yeah, this guy, he's a college professor in Arizona State University, and he teaches the universe from nothing, and I'm sure many Christians will think, oh, well, maybe God is just
not needed anymore. So you need to question and challenge and be discerning, more so than take things at face value. And the reason, and how you can be discerning, if you are equipped, with, again, any arguments and knowledge of reason and logic and so on and so forth, apologetics in general. There are several books that I recommend for all of you to read. I was going to give you a list of books on Sunday as we conclude, but I can, if you want to ask for specific topics that you would like to read and expand your knowledge base on, let me know, and I would love to give you some books. I mean, these books, again, will equip you for you to be able to challenge these college professors. But you're right, many fall victims because of someone that came up with, and he does not seem to be appealing to science, خالص, at all. Comments, or shall we just conclude? All right, so I hope to see you all tomorrow. It gets a little bit more exciting tomorrow as we get into the moral and ethical issues. And tomorrow we'll begin at 8, liturgy at 8:30, and the first lecture is probably at noon. So again, thank you again for your time, and I appreciate it. I ask you to keep me in your prayers for this.
Thank you very much. My knowledge of apologetics started 2 years ago when I got my rasma term that. But when I so met with George last year, he was really very good experience that the science of apologetics we get usually from American books and leaders, say William Lane Craig or Rabbi Zacharias or Lee Strobel or many others, John Lennox. But it's really phenomenal and very unique to have all this combination together with our Christian, with our Coptic or Orthodox faith, using our Orthodox fathers as well, which is what George presents to us. So it's really a very nice and unique experience to have this science in the Coptic Church, and that's a very, very encouraging and promising thing. So thank you, George, and I really encourage everyone to come tomorrow and Sunday. Tomorrow I leave it for the youth to go over the program, but I really encourage you all to register, and it's not too late. You can still register for the rest of the conference.